You're listening to the Tumbling Saber Podcast, a member of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. Check us out on the web at starwarscommonwealth.com, on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook, and take your first steps into a larger world. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 51 of the Tumbling Saber Podcast. And I don't know about what you guys think, but we got some very dismaying news this week. Stephen Hawking gave us 1,000 years to get off this blue marble of ours. Corey, I don't know how you feel about that, but I'm scared, man. I'm scared for future generations of our family, of our race.
I actually didn't hear that news, but it's actually not that surprising, to be honest. And I think it's actually kind of an optimistic number.
Yeah, we might wipe ourselves out well in advance of that. James, how you doing? What do you think about Mr. Hawking and his prediction?
I also didn't hear that this week, so you can tell Corey and I spent a lot of time reading the scientific sites that you're exploring.
Facebook.
It's funny, actually. I love Stephen Hawking, and I'm subscribed to his Facebook feed, so I'm surprised I didn't see that. But either way, I believe everything that guy says, or everything that his eyes tell his computer to say. I think that guy's, the premier thinker on this planet when it comes to looking up at the stars. So if he says we got 1,000 years left, he's got as good a guess as anybody, no?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, like you said, everything that comes out of that man's mouth, I'm like, you can book it. And of course, 1,000 years is a long time, so maybe we don't need to worry that much, but geez, that is kind of depressing.
Yeah, a lot of stuff's got to happen pretty quick. Like, you better start terraforming Mars, like, now.
Well, that was part of his message, we have to do it quick because there's no, like, we're not going to be on Mars colonizing that place for the next 100 years. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but that's what he says, and I'm going with it. But the most depressing thought is, and I hate to kick the show off on a downer, but our own sun one day will burn out and eat up our planet. That to me is the most depressing thought I could possibly think of.
Yeah, I've thought about that, but that's the circle of life, man. Like stardust.
Yeah, it's true. We're, like, our planet's made of exploded old stars and planets. So, you know, we're made of star pieces, Kyle. Think of that.
Ooh.
Yeah. Oh, and I also learned while teaching high school science that all the metals are you can't make metals at the, like, molecular level, so like gold and stuff, without exploding stars. So, like, all of the metals on Earth are definite signs that we're made up of pieces of exploding of old dead stars.
Pretty amazing, huh?
It's super amazing.
Actually, I have Stephen Hawking's book. It's the illustrated version of A Brief History of Time.
Oh, I love that one. It's the one where it's like all blank and you get the color. Oh, not the coloring one. Maybe a different book.
No, not no. It's well, there's the paperback one, which may or may not have like little diagrams in it. But this one is a hardcover with actual graphs and artwork and pictures to help illustrate some of his, more complicated points for dullards like myself.
I like pictures.
I've never read it. Now there's just so much Star Wars stuff for me to read that I don't know if I'll ever read anything non-Star Wars related ever again.
I don't know. Stephen Hawking could be a good catalyst for inspiration. What are you going to read in the Star Wars world?
Well, it's funny you should mention it. A couple of things dropped for Star Wars fans this week. Chief among them is the Catalyst novel, the prelude to Rogue One, which is out in well under a month now. I'm about, 50, 60 pages into Catalyst, and it is awesome. I think this book, if I had to make an early call, it is going to be probably my favorite of the new canon books. It's going to beat out Bloodline. It's go ahead.
Don't tell Corey that. He's never going to finish Bloodline.
That's probably true. That was probably true regardless.
That's not true. I'll answer the question later on.
Corey's packing for a move, and I bet you he's lost the book.
Actually, no, it's sitting right beside me. I'll tell you exactly what page I'm on. Hang on. Let's check here. I am on page 216, chapter 21.
Wow. Yeah,
it's coming along. I was
expecting you to say no more than like page 87.
No, I read a few pages. I read like 35 pages yesterday. I just didn't want to pack anymore, so I was procrastinating.
Good. Yeah, so Catalyst is so far fantastic, and I can't wait to get through the rest of it. I had hoped to read a lot more this weekend as I had a long road trip to and from Mississauga, but the wife didn't feel like driving, especially today with the white knuckle road conditions, so I did not get my opportunity. But that's all right. New week starts in a few hours, so I'll get back at it. And also coming out this week, or this past week, I should say, is The Force Awakens on 3D Blu-ray, that format that I don't think needed to be around in the first place. But there it is, and a four-disc set. You got the 3D version of the movie, the 2D version on Blu-ray, plus a DVD disc, and a bonus disc. Does anybody here plan on actually picking that up?
No, not at all.
I'll probably end up with finding it under the tree, I suspect.
You think so?
I do, yeah. I'm hard to buy for, I think. I think my family thinks I'm hard to buy for. So there's certain themes that just, they know, you know, Star Wars is safe and Lord of the Rings is safe and golf is safe. So that's what, and I'm good with that. They're not wrong. So that's what ends up under the tree.
That's kind of what I tell people, that people who say, like, I don't know what to get for you. I'm like, how long have you known me? Hockey, Star Wars. If it has those logos on it, I'm good. Like, how hard can it be?
It's funny, yeah.
If you don't know, just get me an Amazon gift card and I'll take care of it myself.
Yeah, I agree. And people are like, yeah, but I got you Lord of the Rings last year or whatever, you know. I still like it. It's still my favorite thing. You can get it again next year, too.
Yeah, it still makes me happier than anything else you're thinking about.
Yeah, that's it. Now you exactly. just gotta think double as hard as what's cooler than what you got me last year from the Lord of the Rings or Star Wars.
I just like different editions. You can buy a million editions of that book, and I'll take them all. It's dollars for paperbacks, and that's the thing. I can't instill that upon my family enough. Speaking of books, we'll segue back in, Kyle.
Nice job. That's the two things we got this week. Catalyst. Hopefully everybody plans on at least checking out the main content about that book, if not picking it up outright. And The Force Awakens on 3D Blu-ray, which I would use the 3D disc as a coaster. Actually, I'm on the fence. I don't know if I'm actually going to buy it or not, because I do want to hear the J.J. Abrams commentary. And I would like to see the new featurettes and some of the deleted scenes that maybe we didn't see the first time around. But I'm glad, because if this disc had been dropped on us unannounced, I'd be some kind of pissed. Like I think it's kind of a dirty move to release a movie in one format and then less than a year later release it again. But at least they told us up front that they'd be doing this, so I have way less of a problem with it.
True, but it does stink. Like you said, like I want to see all these featurettes and like the bonus materials, but I also don't want to go out there and get it again. You know, I already have a Blu-ray and a DVD, so, and like a...
Well, I mean, if they know one thing, if Disney knows one thing about Star Wars fans, is that they will pay multiple times for the same thing if you just mix it up slightly.
No, no doubt.
And that's our fault. That's nobody's fault but our own. And Disney, as a huge corporation, which knows exactly what they're doing, it's just taking advantage of that.
Yeah, but if you don't need to actually own it because, you know, you like to put your hands on the physical entity itself, there's, you know, in 2016, I'm sure there's a way to see all that stuff on the internet.
Yes, the internet does have a funny way of letting slip all of that content that we do want to see, right? But anyway, moving on. So, Star Wars Identities. This exhibition is now, I guess, setting roots in London for the next many, many months. I think it's opening. It opened this weekend, which is why I'm talking about it now. And it's there until September of 2017. So, everybody in the UK has plenty of time to get to this thing. But I would strongly suggest, and we have a lot of listeners in the UK, if you're thinking of going to this, you're not quite sure, or you think that that's something I'll do like maybe next summer as before it leaves, don't dawdle.
Go do it. We're jealous. We wish we could go do it.
We had this here in 2012 at our IMAX. It was in the old port of Montreal at the Science Center, and it was. I don't want to scream amazing because I have two little kids upstairs sleeping, but it was incredible. What an exhibit this was. Just to see costumes and props and the models, the concept art. It was unbelievable. I the last time I took that many pictures in that short a time span, I was in Paris. Like my camera was just full. And just to see the models of all the ships up close like that, all the detail, it was worth it alone. And it wasn't that expensive a ticket, if I remember correctly. But definitely go see that. And if you're not sure, I mean, there's plenty of. It's a great site that they've put up there. But my Instagram account at Tumbling Saber will have a bunch more pictures that I took myself from 2012. So. If you're so inclined, you want to know what you could be in store for, go check out at Tumbling Saber on Instagram and see for yourself. But definitely don't wait. If you got a small family, we got little Star Wars fans in your life, go take them. This is not to be missed.
That's sound advice.
Yeah, I wish I had urged you to go see it in 2012.
Yeah.
That was sound advice, Kyle. Sound advice for sure. Remember that movie, Pump Up the Volume, with Christian Slater?
Oh, yeah. I love that movie.
Well, pump Up the Volume is sound advice.
Oh, jeez. May we never make a Christian Slater reference ever again.
Not true. True Romance.
Actually,
come on.
True rant. Okay, fine. And Cuffs. Cuffs was funny.
Cuffs was funny.
He was kind of good in Young Guns.
What was the one?
In Young Guns? Young Guns 2.
Oh, he was in Young Guns 2.
Gleaming the Cube. Wasn't he in Gleaming the Cube?
What is Gleaming the Cube?
Oh, awesome skateboard movie from the 80s? I don't think it was 90s. I'm pretty sure it was Christian Slater, too.
I'll be so happy if it wasn't.
I'm looking. We'll keep talking. I'll let you know.
Also new this week is a couple new posters, one for IMAX and one for Dolby Cinemas. And both pretty cool looking. I don't know how you guys feel about the IMAX poster. IMAX posters are always a little bit off the beaten path and way different. I think it's a cool poster, but not one that will hang on my wall anytime soon. The Dolby poster, which is basically the Russian poster that we kind of drooled over earlier this fall, that is a spectacular poster. I think that's James's favorite of the lot so far.
No doubt. 100%. It's awesome.
Now, I don't know if it's exactly the same.
The coloring looks different or something, I find. I put them side by side, and I don't know if it's just... like the host site that has whatever different settings, or if the posters themselves look different, it's hard to tell.
Yeah, I was gonna make like a bleak Russian joke, like the Russian poster was sort of more muted, to suit like the bleak Russians like outlook on things, and the American Dolby one was a bit more vibrant. And I don't know if it's also cropped a bit differently, or if the JPEGs that I was looking at were sort of manipulated. But yeah, either way, they're both spectacular posters. I need to try and find a print of this and get it up on my wall.
I would buy that one as well. Yeah. That one I think is, I think we'll look back on it too. It's going to hold up. It's really perfect. it's the best one that they've done for this movie and maybe in the last couple of movies.
It's the most unique one for Rogue One for sure.
One thing I've been surprised about is, I don't know if it feels the same for you guys, but I just feel like we've been kind of like bombarded with posters for this movie. I know other movies too have had a lot of posters, but this movie in particular, to me anyhow, seems like we've had a fair share more of posters.
You know, that doesn't surprise me, Corey. We talked about this in like Jan-Feb, I remember, saying Disney sort of had a responsibility, but like an uphill battle promoting this in the right way and making sure everyone knew that that Rogue One wasn't part of the saga, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I'm not surprised we got sort of more posters, more trailers, more advertising, period. Yeah.
Aimed at different markets sort of as well, kind of like the Russian market, the Asian market.
We forecasted they would, and not that that was a bold forecast, but it seems like they definitely are.
Oh, definitely, yeah. I remember specifically griping about the lack of unique and special posters, and I hate to think the guys at Lucasfilm are listening to us, but maybe they are.
Yeah, for sure. Hey guys.
Well, in other good news,
you're welcome at Lucasfilm.
In other good news too, maybe I think Disney UK Junior UK might have been, or Disney XD UK might have been listening to us as well, because I was speaking to our good friends ads across the pond, and it seems like they've synced up with us now with our recent delays in Rebels over the past month or two. We've missed a Saturday every now and again. They've managed to, they got the premiere Iron Squadron.
Oh, well, isn't that good?
That's
news.
Great news.
Maybe that was the plan all along, but nice to see them on the same page as us now. And finally, quickly here in our last of our quick little announcements from around the Star Wars galaxy, is Rogue One officially PG-13 to the surprise of absolutely nobody. Nope, but.
That's pretty much exactly what I had written down as well.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't a surprise. Everybody kind of had this pegged, especially once that Russian poster came out. And I think everybody saw something 12 on it, which translates over for us as PG-13. So, yeah, this was sort of a 2-foot putt. But you know what? I feel like the potential for this movie, as far as violence goes, I think it's going to be like a more visceral level of violence than we saw in The Force Awakens, which was also rated PG-13. I don't know if that makes any sense. Like, I don't know if violence is violence, but I feel like this one's going to be more in your face and a bit more shocking. For lack of a better
word. No doubt. The Force Awakens had multiple storylines to tell. It wasn't all about battle, but then this movie kind of seems like it's going to be a battle to get wherever they need to go, like the whole way through, you know?
Yeah, right. I just feel like the way war will be depicted in this movie will be
more realistic.
Will cut closer to the bone.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be more realistic. I don't know, James, do you agree with that? Or is sort of a blaster is a blaster is a blaster?
No, you know what? I'm trying to put my finger on the reason that I agree with you, which I do. And I think it's because the marketing has led me to believe that this movie is going to feel more like Saving Private Ryan and less like Tron, if you know what I mean. I'm not trying to, you know.
No, I know what you mean.
Boots on the ground.
Yeah, it's like they're saying no lightsabers, so I don't think we're gonna see any like crazy force fights necessarily. So it'll just feel maybe more grounded and more real, the violence, if you know, if that makes it more visceral.
I agree with you there. Yeah, But and maybe that's it. Maybe it's because we've all been telling ourselves that this is the Saving Private Ryan of Star Wars movies. This is Black Hawk Down. So we're getting that feel, those images already embedded into our brains.
Yeah, I'm sure that's part of it.
Yeah, we're probably setting the table for ourselves here.
Well, I've heard that several times that this is going to have a very Saving Private Ryan feel to it.
Which I'm okay with.
Of course.
All right, so let's kick into some real news here.
Kyle,
I
got a quick question for you, Kyle. Did you hear this? I just before getting onto the show, I was messing around on Twitter for a bit, and there was a lot of people posting saying that Rogue One tickets are going on, like went on sale for them in the UK, like today, I think, or this evening.
I did see that. I did see sort of an official announcement, but depends on where you are. You have to check. Because I hopped online before we started recording here, and at least our cinema chain here is not selling tickets as of yet. I checked their I actually reached out to one of their representatives because people are asking me for tickets, right? We all know this, and Carlos is going to join us for Rogue One when we go see it on. Yeah, we've got another friend coming, so there's going to be at least five of us going to the movie. And I expect a couple other people will come out of the woodwork and ask for tickets. And so I said, you know what? I better find out what limitations I have. So I reached out and I said, when are the tickets going on sale? How many can I buy? And it's never simple. It has to be convoluted for everything. So he told me it's not necessarily a limitation on the dollar amount. They could cap it at like number of tickets. Or they could cap it at a dollar amount purchase, which is weird to me. It also depends on which theater you're going to see.
What?
It's so bizarre. They said, so he asked me, what cinema are you going to? So I told him, and he said, oh, that theater, no, it's eight tickets. There's no restriction on the dollar amount. So I still have three vacancies, maybe two. Thinking of another friend here that may want to join us, so I'll get six tickets at this point.
Billy and Shannon would come for sure.
But anyway, we're gonna see a lot of people, a lot of familiar faces, I'm sure. So anyway, check your with your local cinema. You may already have access to Rogue One tickets. Don't miss out. And with that, we can now step into some real news here. And while I was en route to the concrete jungle of Mississauga, Ontario, it was announced that Game of Thrones star Emilia Clarke is going to be joining the cast of the Han Solo movie. And I don't watch Game of Thrones at all. I've seen the first episode, and I haven't gone back to it since. But I am excited about this. I hear nothing but great things about this actress. So I don't know if you guys are more familiar with her, but let me know what you think. Corey, how does this news strike you?
It sounds great. I don't know of her work all that. I'm not that familiar with it. I'm not watching Game of Thrones right now, but she's a hot topic right now. You know, she's a hot actress. Everyone seems to be liking her. My one thing that I've heard people kind of griping about is what's the last actress they just hired for the Han Solo project? Do you remember?
Negative.
Anyhow. Like, basically, they really don't... People do not want Emilia Clarke to be playing Han Solo's love interest. Or retconning the role of...
Okay.
You know. Like, basically...
Forget the complainers. Let's move on.
No, I'm stoked about it. She seems like a really solid actress. So, it just means... The cast of this movie alone is, like, amazing so far.
Yeah, James, you had a very interesting comment because we touched base via Facebook over the weekend talking about this.
This cast, yeah, for sure. That's what I was going to say. Young, hot, trendy cast. It feels like so we had the Brat Pack and then we had the we had the Rat Pack and then the Brat Pack. So I'm labeling them the at pack.
That's perfect.
Seriously, like these three, Ehrenreich and Glover and now her, are probably like if there's three It people to choose, they're all in one movie. I think it's really a good sign for marketing. Now they got to put a product behind it for sure. But I'm pumped. I'm psyched. I can't wait.
Yeah, you can see like right off the bat. I think these actors will have a lot of chemistry with one another.
Yeah, I mean just on their talent alone, I feel like these actors. I mean, not that I know any of them super well. I would say Donald Glover's body of work is the one I'm most familiar with. But based on what I do know, like there is oodles of talent here.
Yeah, they seem legit. Like they're multi-talented. They sing, they dance, they act. They play a wide range of characters. I think it's going to be, yeah, nothing but good signs. And I think it's going to be a really strong acted movie. Like I said, I hope they give them material to work with. But they've done all the right things in casting so far.
Yeah, so who's that Star Wars... Ian McKeg, I think it was. And he was in Australia earlier this year, and he had said that he'd read the script for whatever stage it was at for the Han Solo flick and said it was the best script or screenplay that he had ever read in his life. And of course, I know that he's maybe sort of pumping up the home team here, but that is a hell of an endorsement. So I hope that they make true on this because... Right now, everything just looks like it's going to be so good. And we've seen nothing of this movie, but we're getting really stoked on the cast.
No, for sure. This movie...
It just seems that...
This movie's going to be amazing.
Cool is the word. That they are the cool kids. They are the hot young, and this is like a cool, cool cast. Redefining cool.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to go for that vibe to make a really cool, slick movie with trendy young actors... The Han Solo movie's got to do it, right? This is Han Solo. We've all kind of said that this is the coolest guy in the galaxy. We've said it for 35 years. If you're going to do a standalone movie, it may as well just have that vibe right all the way through.
Be uber cool, for sure.
Yeah, I'm going to say it again. I really think this movie is going to, like, Rogue One's kind of taking the Saving Private Ryan approach, and I think Han Solo movie's going to take from many genres, but I think it's really going to have, like, a bit of Ocean's 11 feel to it, you know? It's gonna be like fun.
That's another strong cast. Yeah, that's a good comparison, probably. John Hughes from the 80s putting all the cool kids on screen together.
Yeah, this will be Ocean's 11 in space, maybe, but with a much younger cast. Like right now, Donald Glover's sort of the old man in, and he's like, what, 30, 32 years old or something like that?
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. So, yeah, hopes are getting up for this movie, and we still haven't even seen a production photo. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but the bar is getting raised with everything they do here at Lucasfilm. So at one point, it's going to come crashing down, right? You got to imagine at some point they're going to step in some Bantha poodoo, but it doesn't look like they're doing it anytime soon.
Yeah, exactly. Like, look at the schedule. We got Rogue One. We're not going to be let down. Episode 8, we're surely not going to be let down. Then we got Han Solo right after that. Like you said, they're setting the bar high.
Okay, so Darth Maul. He's getting a miniseries, a five-part miniseries debuting in February. And are you having a stroke there, Corey? You okay?
I'm so excited.
That's the sound he made when he thought you lost your glasses, too.
Exactly. James loved that.
So Cullen Bunn is writing and Luke Ross is on art. And this is set... well before I don't know, I don't think it was quite clear how far before The Phantom Menace it was set. I got a couple questions. So I am excited about this, of course, but is this too much Maul now? James, do you think we've hit the Darth Maul saturation point?
Well, since I'm still lagging way behind in Rebels, I'm not mauled out yet. Now, maybe I will be once I'm up to date, because I know I got Maul coming my way. I don't know. I don't read comic books. This won't really enter my, this only hit my periphery when we talk about it on the show. So for me, it's not too much.
How about you, Corey?
No, not at all. I saw some stuff going on the internet, you know, kind of on that vine kind of, and No, like, I love the idea. Like, I think he's quickly becoming one of my favorite characters of all time. Like, I was really not okay with the way they brought him back.
Really?
Yeah, like, I didn't like the way they brought him back, but now that he's back, like, I'm just so down with the character, and it's going to line up perfectly for, like, future stuff, you know? Like, it's going to be good to have. It's only a 5-part miniseries as well. And it's going to be really interesting to see him interacting with Sidious and what Sidious has to say. Like, I'm really curious.
Well, this is kind of my concern. And I haven't seen any of the chatter about this. But my concern is that when Darth Maul was introduced, his role, very specifically, was to be just sort of a dumb, blunt weapon. Literally to be Sidious's attack dog, which he was. And he was dispatched, and we all thought he was dead for good. And so then they brought him back in the Clone Wars in a weird way, but he fit. His quest for revenge on Kenobi really fit. And the way he went after Sidious and how that ended, that fit. And then he came back in Rebels. Okay. And so far, so good, I guess. But now you're seeing this progression in the character from that blunt weapon to now more, he's like power-hungry, calculating rogue.
Oh, he's super genius in this
series.
Like, you see that in the Clone Wars. Like, he builds an empire almost.
Well, and that's it. This is kind of the part where I'm getting uncomfortable with Maul, is that you saw none of that. Of course, you didn't see him a lot, period, in The Phantom Menace. But you distinctly get the impression that this guy was just a weapon. And now suddenly he's running around behind everybody's back, and he's super smart, and he's building an empire on his own, with his own guile and cunning. And now they're going to do this comic book series where they're going to sort of, I don't think retcon is the right word, but they're going to kind of build some of that craftiness, resourcefulness that Maul now has into the pre-Phantom Menace era, so that it all sort of feels, or at least looks, more of a smoother narrative. I don't know. I'm close to my Maul saturation point.
Really?
I hope that in the next... Yeah.
I only hit the tip of the iceberg, man.
Like, I hope that in the next year or two that...
There's a conclusion.
We're tapped out with
Maul.
Yeah,
I want a conclusion. Yeah, and I think we're going to have it. So that's a good thing. Like, we got to get this stuff in here now. And I don't know, he wasn't...
Yeah,
he...
I want them to be done with Maul and with Rebels. I hope they just deal with him in Rebels and he's done. And then we have this 5-part series. We get a little bit of his backstory and we're done. You have all the Maul you need. We can move on and throw some dirt
on it. Well, I see it more in the other sense, in that we're going to get a bit of Maul before we take the mid-season break. And then before we get back into the new season, we're going to get this, so that can kind of coincide with him being back in the second half of third season.
Yeah, you might be right about that.
But either way, like,
sounds reasonable.
I don't
me
even
anyway.
See it. Like, I do see him as a weapon and stuff, but he's still a Darth. Like, even though Sidious is his master, like, he's pretty much just a quiet guy and a loyal apprentice, I guess. Doesn't, just because he's good at fighting and doesn't talk much, doesn't mean he's just like a weapon, you know?
Well, I mean, that's the add-ons to the character they've done in recent years, but in 1999. That's what he was.
But I think
Lucas had written him in just to be this attack dog.
Do you think that has anything to do with Ray Park playing the role?
What do you mean, in that Ray Park is not a great actor?
No, like, just...
Is that what you're trying to say?
In most of his roles, though, like, even in X-Men as well, like, he didn't really say all that much.
Well, yeah, I mean, Ray Park's physicality is
his strong point.
The number one attribute of the character, or of the actor. I don't know, I'm just somewhat uncomfortable with the entire arc. It's interesting, and it makes for entertaining TV. I'm just not fully sold. The more they do with Maul, the more shaky ground I find myself on with the character.
Oh, dude, we had this conversation, like, I can't say much now, because, you know, James is here, but, like, dude, it's all leading to big things.
Oh, I know. I know it is. But just because it is leading to big things doesn't mean you have to like it or agree with the path taken. Anyway, time will tell. This book comes out in February and maybe it'll be fantastic and it will reframe my entire perspective on the character. And I don't hate the character. I'm just saying, I'm getting to the point where I've had enough of the character.
Well, I'll agree with you in the sense that I definitely want to see or have a conclusion.
Yeah, I definitely don't want Darth Maul to vanish again, only to emerge 30 years down the line, and he's 95 years old, Darth Maul. Forget it. Like, I'm not buying that. Oh, who the hell am I kidding? I probably would buy it. Okay, so let's move on to a story that's kind of been sitting in my show notes here for a few weeks, but I just kept bumping it because we were full. Kylo Ren in Episode 8. So Making Star Wars picked this up. And it's more to do with Kylo Ren and his love of Darth Vader, his love of all things Grandpa. So apparently in Episode 8, he's going to be wearing a cape. Very similar, and here's where the I guess confusion comes in. Is it an actual Darth Vader cape or a replica? So we know that Kylo Ren is still trying to imitate his grandfather, but does he actually have his hands on an authentic piece of game-worn Darth Vader memorabilia, or is it just like a Chinese knockoff? James, what do you think?
I'm going to go on record and say that there's no way he could afford an original. Those things are just too pricey, even on eBay. That's a good question. He's got the helmet. Why wouldn't he have the cape? I'm going to go ahead and say I hadn't thought about it till just now, but it's more fun to think it's actually his grandfather's cape. So it's his grandfather's cape.
Corey?
Corey doesn't have any ideas about this because...
No, I'm in.
Oh, there he is.
Yeah, I don't know.
So, Corey...
Go for it.
Is it a authentic Darth Vader cape, or is it just something that he whipped up himself?
I'd like to get into this perspective, how many game capes Vader went through. If you know what I mean.
It's a good question. Like, does Darth Vader have a rack of them in his closet? That he just, there's my Monday cape, and he would just throw that one on?
Because I think the one suspicion they were kind of saying is that the thing that's leading them to believe that in the new costume that supposedly he's going to be wearing is that he's got that metal choker kind of thing, that collar around his neck, attaching the cape, I believe.
Right.
So I remember asking you this years ago, because Count Dooku kind of wears the same thing in, I can't remember if it's Attack of the Clones or Revenge of the Sith, but either way, he's got one, so I kind of asked, is that like a Sith thing, kind of, or... But, yeah, I mean, unless Vader's cape's like super fire retardant, I don't understand how it could be that same cape. Like, his helmet looked pretty trash, so...
Yeah, I don't think it's the cape, in any case, I don't think it's the cape that sat on the funeral pyre that Luke burned. I think it would have to be some other cape that Vader had. He must have, I assume he had more than
one.
Yeah,
he's been through several changes, revamps, upgrades.
Okay, so if it's real then, why wasn't he wearing it in The Force Awakens?
Maybe he didn't.
Like if he's so devoted to his grandfather, why not just wear all his stuff?
I'm going to go with like it's like a general star, like he hadn't achieved the rank yet.
Exactly,
like
he hasn't
achieved the Sith rank of cape wearing Sith yet.
Yeah, he hadn't earned
so
it to himself.
Snoke wouldn't let him wear it?
Or he wouldn't let himself. Something about, you know, because Snoke said, let's bring him back and complete his training, right? So if he's wearing it in this movie, maybe he's achieved some level of dark force userness that he feels that is appropriate for cape wearing.
And even...
That's a great perspective. I hadn't thought about that. So maybe now that he killed his dad, he feels like he's worthy to wear the cape.
Yeah, exactly. Like, even Snoke tells him in The Force Awakens, I actually watched it yesterday, and, you know, he's telling him, even you haven't faced such a great a challenge yet, you know? And obviously talking about, I would believe, assume, killing his own pappy.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think the test was in facing
Ray,
his father, and not giving into the light. But I had lame excuses like, well, maybe he just didn't have the cape. Maybe he picked it up somewhere in between. Or maybe he had it and it was just in the laundry that day.
Well, we know from Bloodline, Kyle, that like aftermarket Empire stuff is a hot commodity.
Whoa. Wow. Look at that, Corey talking Bloodline.
Bring the thunder.
Huh.
Take that, Carlos Candido.
I'm gonna send it out there right now. I'll take a bet right now that I swear to God I'm gonna finish both Bloodline and Catalyst before Rogue One comes out. What up?
I'll take that bet.
Yeah?
You're moving. There's no way.
It shouldn't be that bad.
I'll take it. I'll take that bet.
The loophole is that Corey springs for the audiobook.
I've never done that, and I've always wanted to. Ooh, I've always wanted to so bad. We used to have these wicked Star Wars ones back in the day.
Really good, too.
Remember the Star Wars ones, Kyle? With the... Turn the page.
Yeah.
They're awesome.
the children's audiobooks that were like 8-minute recordings.
So good.
This one, I'm sure, is going to be like... I'm sure Catalyst is somewhere between 8 to 10 hours.
That would be cool.
But 8 to 10 hours well spent, I'll tell you that. Okay. Well, let's... I think we all agree if it's going to be there, it's an authentic Darth Vader cape that he just didn't feel he was worthy to wear. I'm on board with that. I'm glad. And this is why it's good to have co-hosts to bring up valid points when you can't think of anything worthwhile saying.
I hope we get a little background on it. If it is like which Vader era. Like, you know, he's going to break it down. He's like, my daddy wore that, or my grandfather wore this at the Battle of Bespin.
I don't know if they'd go that deep on it, but I guess it would be interesting. This is the cape my grandfather wore when he put my dad in carbonite.
Yeah.
When he nuked Alderaan.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're just giving that false sense of there's evil in this cape, and I'm wrapping myself in it. What a donkey. He's such a doofus. Okay, so James, we're going to press the eject seat for now. We're going to, unless you want to stick around and talk about Rebels.
No, I'm still behind. I will do more CAD, blah, blah, blah. I sound like Corey talking about reading.
Should only take a few minutes. This was a very simple episode.
Have fun.
All right, Corey. Well, we finally have some new Rebels to talk about. I missed it, of course. I actually only watched it for the first time about 2 hours ago before hopping on online with you guys. So let's talk about the Iron Squadron. What did you think?
It was a decent episode. Definitely wasn't my favorite of the season, but it was fun. It was cool. Like a lot of good visuals. A lot of good space battles, which, again, I've been banging the drum on. I love seeing the Ghost in action. I love seeing more of these A-Wings, like, in action. Like, we still haven't seen the X-Wing in this yet, so... Like, the A-Wing seems to be the staple of that fleet right now. And, yeah, just... the whole episode pretty much took place in space, which was kind of cool.
Yeah, I going right back to Clone Wars. So, like, among the first episodes we saw, the Malevolence arc. I remember being so struck, and of course that was like in the very early years where I had HDTV at home, just watching how great the space battles looked and how fluid they looked, and it's carried over to, I guess it's a little more cartoony, because we haven't seen any large scale space battles in Rebels yet. It's been small skirmishes where, you know, a cruiser or a Star Destroyer shows up and a handful of Star Destroyers are shooting at the Ghost. Nothing spectacular in terms of size yet, but it always looks really good, and it looks always true to the original trilogy. But you're right, like this was a fun episode. took place almost exclusively in space. So there were a lot of TIE fighters, if you like that kind of thing. And I know that our friend Stu Baca, Tales of Geekdom on Twitter, loves him some TIE fighters. So this episode was right up his alley if he caught it. And again, like you said, nothing huge really to take out of this episode. But nevertheless, I did manage to make a few notes as I had two kids in my lap who were cranky and tired after a long trip. But the biggest takeaway for me, and I didn't follow along on Twitter. I don't know if you did.
No. Well, a little.
But let me just back up. So leading into this episode, for the last 2 weeks, of course, last week here in North America, there was a break. We saw footage or teaser of the Outrider. Now, you told me that you had seen it was confirmed that this was the Outrider.
Well, it sent a link that was posted on, I think it was Star Wars. It was one of the Twitter handles, and I had sent you the clip, but it says it said that it was the Outrider, but nowhere in this episode is it called the Outrider, and it's basically just classified as a YT-2400. Nonetheless, that was like a high point of the episode for me. Like, this ship is so cool.
So were you disappointed when you found out that it wasn't Dash Rendar?
No. I mean, that was really setting the bar high. Like, I thought the chances were maybe like, you know, 1 out of 10, not even. And I wasn't really expecting that.
Interesting.
But it would have been cool had they retconned him somehow. I would have appreciated that. But nonetheless, to see the ship at least was very neat. That ship was pretty cool.
Yeah, I think anytime they introduce a freighter, one of these light freighters into the Star Wars universe, they all look and feel so familiar. So no surprise that we kind of respond to that the same way we look at the Ghost and the Falcon.
Yeah.
But for me, I think that the best or biggest takeaways was the Easter eggs embedded in the character names. Did you catch those?
No.
So Mart Matten made me laugh out loud, which nobody understood. My wife just looked at me and goes, "What's so funny?" So you had Mart Matten, who, if you just kind of flop around the letters, you get Matt Martin, who's part of the Lucasfilm story group. And if you watch the Star Wars show, if you watch Rebels Recon, then you know that the character, that very colorful, the female member of the Iron Squadron, her name was Goody Terrez.
God.
Which, of course, was a play on Andy Gutierrez.
That's so cool. Lucky them. And
I can't go... Yeah. For me, that was the funnest part of the episode.
I can't believe I didn't pick up on that.
I'm really happy for them that they got... Yeah. I can't believe it either. What's the matter with you?
Yeah, that's their names aren't mentioned all that much.
But the... They do mention their names. They don't go with their last names, I don't think. Like, Mart Matten did. But I don't think Goody Terrez was mentioned. Like, her first name was. But you had to read the credits to see the last name. And there was the third member who, John or Jin. And I'm not schooled enough on all the people at Lucasfilm to know who that is. But no doubt that's also an embedded Easter egg, which is very nice for those people involved.
It's also a quick note, too, that the character is playing Matt. What was it? Matt Martin?
Mart Matten.
Sorry. That's Sato's nephew.
Yeah, exactly. So let's go there. It seems like they're doing more to pull Sato into the more focus of the story here. I don't know if this is going to be a big point moving forward, but it looks like that Sato's kind of always been in the background for us, and it now looks like he's going to at least take a little bit of a step closer to the fore. Do you think that's accurate, or was this just sort of a one-off?
No, it totally, again, like a design set up by Thrawn. Thrawn tells him at the end of the episode, basically, like, now I know what it takes you to get you out here, kind of, you know? So,
yeah, no,
he's exactly, the commander and leader of the Alliance at this point, right?
Well, at least the fleet.
Fleet, yeah.
Is he Admiral Sato? Is he General Sato?
I think it's Commander.
Commander Sato. So that's not even that high of a rank.
Well, he's definitely in charge of the fleet, and he's got more say than anyone we know so far, maybe other than Bale.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. But yeah, so it seems like they're looking to pit Sato against Thrawn, which is not going to end well for Sato.
Could not end either well for either of them, I hope. You know, we know that, you know, we haven't seen Thrawn in any future Star Wars, so it's a good chance he might meet his end in this series as well. Now, how about a head-on collision, Carillion ship ramming into Star Destroyer kind of deal?
Maybe. Obviously, we have no idea, but...
No, definitely. They set it up like big time at the end, just like, until we meet again. And like Thrawn's just like, yes. Like,
I've never been a big Sato fan. To me, I've always felt like he's just a bit of a dope.
Yeah, I know you've said that a couple times.
And so when he shows up out of hyperspace to lend a hand as reinforcements for the Ghost, I'm like, this is the first useful thing he's ever done. And of course, I'm being kind of tongue in cheek, but it's the first useful thing I can remember him doing. Like, can you think of anything else? Probably not.
Oh, you know, he's a behind the scenes kind of guy.
Well, as a commander, he should be more of a not behind the scenes guy.
Yeah, this is a story about the the Ghost, you know, Ezra.
Well, you know what? On the thing with Ezra, I think they very intentionally put him and Sabine back together. You know, and there's that moment where he wraps his arm around Sabine and Chopper and says, "We got this."
Yeah. They're like a team.
Yeah, and it seems like they're going somewhere with that. I don't know if they're at some point they're going to make them a couple. But it looks like they're going out of their way to make us think that.
Anyway. I agree with you. Like, I kind of had the feeling, basically, when this episode ended, like, I thought in my head right away, like, we have definitely not seen the last of Iron Squadron as well. And funny quote from the beginning of the episode, Zeb, he basically says, he's like, "Sounds like a ship full of Ezras."
Yeah, poor Zeb. Like, he's gotten in this whole season so far.
I got that written here, too. He's gotten the cold shoulder the whole season so far, which is kind of a bit sad. He had some funny looks in this episode. Chopper didn't as well. Chopper and R3 had some major roles to play again.
Yeah, I mean, we still, as far as Zeb goes, there's still 15 or so episodes left. But I think Zeb's got to start getting in the game here. He's been way underused.
Yeah, I definitely think something's going to happen there soon with him. They know.
Okay, so the big question here. So does Mart's predicament, does that count as being captured? And bear in mind that your answer is going to determine if a very unsavory streak continues or not. So does Mart's predicament count as captured?
Yes.
Oh, the streak is alive.
I have this written. I knew you were going to bring this up, basically. So, yeah, what can you do, man? Like, it's capture / trap. I don't know.
Well, I mean, they
could have got away. He could have got away.
No, the Outrider was trashed, man. He had no power, no engines.
Yeah, but he
wasn't going anywhere.
He could have got out with them in the Phantom, too. But he decided to stay.
That's true. All right, so the streak is alive. What, that's 6 or 7 now? 6 episodes in a row where the good guys have been captured to some degree.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Just quickly, I don't know if you noticed this.
It's not
good. I don't know if you noticed this again, Kyle, before we get out of this Rebels thing, but did you notice again when Thrawn was first introduced the Transylvanian type organ playing for his theme?
Yeah, that's
his theme.
That's gonna be Thrawn's music throughout.
Sure. I liked how Thrawn tested. He basically tested also Sato, but he also tested, I can't remember the commander's name. The guy with the mustache there. He basically said, like, "No, I'm sending you out there." Like,
Constantine.
Yeah, Constantine, yeah. So Constantine...
Who lied to Thrawn.
Exactly.
And that's not going to be good for Mr. Constantine.
No, it couldn't end up pretty bad.
He's going to be in big trouble. Because he was also, like, Thrawn sent him with one ship, or told him to take one ship, but he took three, right?
Yeah, he took several, yeah.
There was the light cruiser and at least two transports.
And multiple TIE bombers and fighters.
Yeah. So I think he overstepped his bounds and then lied about it. Naughty Admiral Constantine, or Captain, or whatever he is. Anyway, that's it for Rebels this week. I haven't watched Rebels Recon yet, so I don't know if there's a preview for... I assume there's a preview for the next episode. But I don't know if the next episode is next week or not. Do you have any input there, Corey?
Nope.
Way to add value.
Thanks.
Good job.
What's up, boys?
Hey, welcome back, James.
Thank you.
We are just about ready to hear from our good friend, Ads. He sent us another two-parter this week. Sure to put us in stitches and twist Corey into pretzels of all makes and sizes. So let's hear what Ads has to say this week.
Hello, lads. Hope the three of you are well. Another couple of questions this week. So the first one is quite a simple one. Which Star Wars character do you most associate with? And do the others agree? And then the second question's a bit more detailed, and to do with Force ghosts. Obviously, at the end of Jedi, Anakin is one of the three Force ghosts, along with Obi-Wan Kenobi and Yoda. Now, we're obviously led to believe that both Yoda and Obi-Wan have spent considerable time learning how to become a Force ghost. I recently bought a book called The Ultimate Star Wars. It's like an encyclopedia, I suppose, of the saga. And there's a page there called Yoda's Trials. And I'm going to just read a short extract from it. Guided by the spirit of Qui-Gon Jinn, who speaks of a way to retain one's consciousness after death, Yoda journeys to a strange world near the center of the galaxy. He finds a place rich in the Force, covered with thriving plant life and tendrils of light that extend deep into the planet's core. Five Force priestesses intercept him, each identical save for the masks they wear. Yoda learns that each priestess represents a specific emotion: joy, anger, confusion, sadness, and serenity, and that he will need to pass their trials to gain the knowledge that Qui-Gon spoke of. The first trial sees Yoda face off against a twisted, shadowy version of himself. Only by admitting that the shade is part of his true nature is Yoda able to overcome the challenge. The second trial takes place in the Valley of Extinction, where Yoda sees a vision of an alternate present where the Clone Wars never happened and Count Dooku remained a loyal member of the Jedi Order. Yoda rejects this tempting falsehood, winning the approval of the Force priestesses. For his third trial, Yoda travels to the Sith homeworld of Moriband. There, he confronts a vision of Sith Lord Darth Bane and battles Darth Sidious inside an illusion, eventually emerging victorious. In the years to come, Yoda will perfect the ability he gained from the Force priestesses by living on in the Force after his physical body passes into death. Now, I believe this comes from the Clone Wars, which I haven't actually fully watched, so feel free to obviously comment or expand on that. It does, though, seem to confirm that it would have taken both Yoda and Obi-Wan a considerable time to learn that particular skill, which doesn't really fit with the ending of Jedi, when Anakin, a short while after his death on the Death Star, turns up as a Force ghost amongst all the Yub-Nub celebrations. So, are we meant to assume that he learnt this skill from a dark side perspective? I believe the old expanded universe may have had a number of examples of dark side Force ghosts, but we haven't actually seen anything in the new Disney version. I think I'd just like your general thoughts on it, really, rather than a specific question. All right, that's it for now. No doubt it's been another fantastic show, and I look forward to listening to it. Long live the Commonwealth. Take care.
And there goes Ads, the shining knight of the Commonwealth, with two great questions this week. Thank you, sir. And so, Corey, which Star Wars character do you most associate with?
That's really...
Wait, which one bends the rules the most?
Okay. I didn't really try to bend any rules, but I thought about this for a while because... Oh, God, there's so many characters, and you think about them all, and... I don't know, I was obviously leaning toward the Han Solo, Lando type. Like, I want to be the cool, like, smooth dude, but... After thinking about it all, like, we don't still know him all that much, but I kind of went with Poe Dameron, you know, because, you know, he's funny, he's happy, like, he's brave, he's awesome, so.
I don't want to go with Han or Orlando because, you know, they're too cool, so I'll go with the new super cool guy from the new movie.
Yeah, but it's basically just it's a different version.
A combination,
you know,
of Lando and Han.
Well, Han's a little too pessimistic. You know, like, that's the way I was thinking about it.
Yeah, that's true. You're positive.
And Lando kind of, like, backstabbed his friends, but he made up for it in a big way, infiltrating Jabba's palace. But
let's see. Do we agree that Corey is Poe?
Come on. Just the way
I see why he said that. So I definitely don't want to give Corey the satisfaction of saying that he's Poe. So I've got a different one, and you can choose between it. Is he Poe? Is he more Poe? Or is he more... R2.
I thought R2 as well, in a way.
R2's super positive, always saving the day. You love astromechs. I don't know. I think R2's a pretty good one for you.
You know what's good?
That's what I had written down.
I thought
for
you were going to say that little, in the original trilogy in A New Hope, that little, like, space mouse kind of thing that's begging for drinks. Remember that guy?
Is that, I think that's Cabe or Kabe. I don't know. Corey as Poe. I definitely get the positivity part. We're gonna do this. That's Corey. Okay. Yeah. Corey could say that.
Oh yeah.
Remember that whole going to Kingston to get in the Star Wars? We're gonna do this.
No, we were gonna do that. That's for sure.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. I appreciate that. And no loopholes.
No. Just thank Kyle.
Yeah. Seriously. Thanks, bro.
You can't spell loopholes without Poe, so.
And James, who do you most associate with?
I had a hard time with this, but just because there's no one I like really associate with, you know, that I think is a super good match. But I want to say Luke Skywalker. Just because he, like, looks like me now a little bit with his beard. and he's super cool and he gets to have a lightsaber. But I don't really associate him more than, like, everybody has self-doubt, right? And he's got, like, a bunch of moments of self-doubt through the trilogy. And it seems like probably we're going to see a little more self-doubt coming up. I don't know if I'm more confident than Luke Skywalker. I don't know if that's a bold thing to say. But, like... I don't associate with him in the sense, like, I haven't struggled with as many deep, powerful things as he has, you know? Like, my life's been a lot easier than his.
Yeah, we have first world problems.
Yeah, that's it. That's what I'm saying, in a long, chunky, trippy kind of way. So the person I sort of thought I would take that I most associate with after Luke, who looks like me, would be Yoda. I know that sounds weird, but I can explain why.
Whatever, Gandalf.
I think... Okay, I don't have to explain why Corey took care of it.
Yeah, no, I could be on board with that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, there's no wizards in Star Wars. Dang, Corey. Well played, sir.
Oh, well, I was...
You ruined his joke.
But no, I was going to kind of go with Obi-Wan for you. That's another thing, too. Like, when you're looking at the question, I'm kind of like, well, you know, all these people, like Luke, you know, you associate somewhat with him for some things. But, like, you know, broken family, like, orphan. Like, I'm not really feeling that, you know.
No, that's it. I got none of that.
I saw you more as the Obi-Wan type, to be honest. But...
Nah, I would take that. There's no real good match for me. Like, I'm I don't know, maybe Chewie? I think Chewie. Oh, I don't want to steal that from Kyle. But I like, I think I'm a good, I think I'm a good buddy, and I'm like pretty sociable. I don't rip people's arms off, and I'm not 7 feet tall. I don't know.
Well, that's it, right? Like, I think your first thought in this drill gravitates to your favorite character, because presumably your favorite character is somebody that resonates with you. But it doesn't always fit. So Chewie is no secret is my favorite character, and I guess there are some things that resonate with me that I could see myself with Chewie, and maybe it begins and stops with being a good sidekick, because I'm certainly not 7 feet tall and I don't tear people's arms off, and I'm not a skilled mechanic. So it can't be Chewie. Who else was it? And James, you kind of encapsulated the whole Luke Skywalker thing very well, so I don't need to repeat that. And you kind of went down Obi-Wan Lane, and that was kind of where I went next. And I do have Obi-Wan's sort of a cynical viewpoint, especially come A New Hope. So that box gets ticked. But ultimately, you know, I see myself as always sort of not the one, but maybe 1A or the 2 guy. So I kind of saw myself as a little bit of Wedge.
Really, eh?
I think back to A New Hope.
I thought you were going to go Qui-Gon there for a second.
No, I'm definitely not Qui-Gon.
But Qui-Gon would be a Sega Jedi in a Nintendo Galaxy.
It's true.
Oh, and if you guys want to assign me with Qui-Gon, I will gladly accept the nomination.
Qui-Gon comes in second to Tarkin. I'm just kidding. No, Qui-Gon.
At least he didn't say 3PO.
Tarkin, my God. No, I kind of I gave myself Wedge. Think back to A New Hope, where he says, that's impossible, even for a computer. That's kind of something I would say, but then I would get out there and give it my best shot anyway. And although Wedge doesn't lay the golden egg there, you know, usually the things that I kind of crap on I can't do that, I end up doing it to a fairly respectable level. And this podcast is sort of that in a nutshell, where I never, before doing this, I'm like, I can't, podcasts are not for me to do. They're for other people to do, for me to listen to. But then I decided, you know, hell with it. Why can't I do a podcast? And so here we are. So I guess I do kind of identify with Wedge a little bit, which I never thought about until Ad's question.
That's some pretty sound reasoning, though. I thought about Wedge as well, and I was like, I don't know, but why, you know?
Now, the why is a little bit tricky. And again, there's no perfect match. I don't know how many people would say, "Oh, I'm exactly this guy." And
I could, you know, I could say I relate quite a bit to Rey. And I know I use her name a lot to make jokes, like, because I think she's pretty. But I really do relate. Like, I've always, like, growing up, I always sort of had this, like, I guess maybe superiority complex is the right word, although it's like a negative thing to say. But like, I always thought I could do everything. Like, I thought that I was better than people. So maybe it's the wrong word, but like, I always thought like I could achieve absolutely like anything. And I've always had that like a tack it sort of personality. There's a lot about Rey that I can absolutely relate to. So that's a character. Yeah, beyond the genitalia, I'd say that's a character I relate to a lot.
Yeah, Finn too, right? I think Finn is very relatable. Yeah.
He is. That's why these characters were so likable, probably, too, right?
Yeah, because like Finn is just in over his head, time and time again.
Yeah,
and I think that, I mean, that's something I can attest to many a times, whether it's personally, professionally. Definitely,
I really like the fact that, you know,
Finn would be on my short list.
Yeah, he was on my short list too, just for the fact that, you know, he's like faced with like super adversity and then kind of like tuck tail. But then he does what's right after.
Absolutely. All right, so that's the first part of Ad's question, which was supposed to be simple, but here we are several minutes later. And we'll move on to part two. So Anakin as a Force ghost. How the hell did this happen? So he kicks the bucket at the end of Jedi just after turning back to the light side. And there he is, appearing alongside Obi-Wan and Yoda to Luke as a Force ghost. And like Ad said, we don't exactly know yet the trials and tribulations that Obi-Wan and Yoda went through to figure out how to become a Force ghost, but it is safe to say it took a lot of practice. And the Ahsoka novel does touch on that from Obi-Wan's perspective. So James, what are your general thoughts, as Ad's asked for, on this whole thing?
So thanks, Ads, again, for another excellent addition to the show. Every week he brings it with quality stuff, and he did it again this week. I stumbled and sort of went back and forth in my head, you know, over and over again with this, because it's a difficult, you know, it's a difficult concept to put your
Did we lose James?
I don't know. We might have.
All right. Well, until James comes back, Corey, why don't you give your thoughts on Force Ghosts? What gives with Anakin?
It's complicated, man. Like, I know James has an answer that he wants to give.
Underneath it all, you know, like everything. So,
there's James. So, James, you cut out for like a good 20 seconds.
Where was I?
A complicated concept.
All right. Are we gonna edit and go back, or?
Well, if you can remember what you said, I'll just leave this in. It'll serve as a reminder to everybody out there that sometimes podcasting doesn't go as planned. Is anybody there now? Okay. All right, well, now James is totally off the call. So, all right, Corey, now you're definitely in. So, run with it.
All right, well, you just said it right away. Like, what happens at the end of A New Hope when Obi-Wan gets smoked? Not 2-3 seconds later, he hears, "Run, Luke, run." Like, that's phase one of Force ghosting, I guess. And he had that down within 3 seconds, so.
Well, I think it's because he already knew what was coming.
Yeah, but I mean, still, it would take some amount of practice. You would think if you're that inert to it, like if it takes that much effort to get to that level, like you said, like right away, 2-3 seconds later, he's telling Luke to run. Luke hears him, and Luke's not even that attuned to the Force yet at that point. The main thing I would think is, you know, I think this is kind of James's point too, is that it's Anakin, you know? He's the chosen one.
Yeah, I'm back, and I agree with that. I guess you guys realized that you lost me again.
Yeah.
Yeah, we heard the Skype thing just sort of click off.
Did you hear us, James?
Yeah, goddamn. No. I just heard the end of what you were saying, and I probably will just repeat myself, so I'll go quickly, but I like the question because I think as I was cut out, I was saying Force ghosting is a complicated concept. So the idea that it took even, you know, Yoda, a super learned Jedi, a super long time to figure it out, and then the fact that Anakin just does it right away is probably just, you know, a mistake. And they're going to have to retcon it by either saying it's because his M-word count is off the chart and he's the chosen one and he can just learn things instantly. Or I guess they could make it a dark side power. It is the thing that he said, and maybe, Corey, you said this, but it is the thing that he said he wanted to learn from Palpatine, right? The reason that he went to the dark side was to learn to cheat death or whatever. So I guess you could retcon it and say, it's a power he learned. It's the thing that he learned as his part of the bargain.
I would go further and say, like, maybe it's a possibility that he had learned that from dark teachings. But I don't think a Sith can do this. I know in Expanded Universe, they'd kind of touched upon it a bit, but I don't think Sis can force ghost, man. I hope not, anyhow.
No, I think that's been confirmed that becoming a force ghost is not a dark side thing. Which is somewhat perplexing because they toyed with the idea of visions of Darth Vader in The Force Awakens. So I don't know if that's when they finally decided, no, Sith cannot force ghost. I'm pretty sure that's legit now.
And what does that mean, too, like, for, like, a character like Windu? Does that mean he couldn't be a Force ghost because he, like, knew both sides of the Force?
No, he wasn't in the...
And it's a question of whether or not he knew about the technique to begin with.
He wasn't in that inner
room. Well, no, but, like, so what discounts you? Like Vader knew both sides of the Force in theory, as well, you know what I mean? So, like, if he learned it as a... Do you know what I'm saying? Like, if he learned about it while he was a Sith, but, like, he knows the Jedi side... of the Force, the light side as well, like he's not immune to learning things that would apply to both sides, if I'm sort of making myself clear.
Yeah, I guess maybe in the end it's what's in your heart when you die, when your physical body dies, that counts. I don't know.
It's all a closed circle too, though. Like, think about it, there's Qui-Gon's kind of the one who kind of brings it up first. Yoda, Obi-Wan's Qui-Gon's apprentice. You know?
Yeah, and ads touched on a bunch of Clone Wars stuff. So if a lot of that sounded unfamiliar to anybody listening, that's stuff that's in Season 6 of the Clone Wars, which was exclusively available on Netflix, the Lost Missions. Really fascinating stuff. And it only served to... get you to ask these kinds of questions.
And it's possible too, you know, think about it, like maybe Yoda having learned the answers to that can possibly facilitate it for others. Not Anakin, obviously, because, you know, I don't think they did much speaking, but James...
Yeah, maybe Yoda knows a few cheats on the way there.
James, you were out of the call at this point though, but I brought up a point earlier, like think about this, like phase one of Force ghosting, Obi-Wan in A New Hope, like seconds after Vader kind of lops him in half or whatever happens and he just vanishes, like 2 seconds later you're hearing, run Luke, run, you know? So like he's already got some kind of handle on whatever's going on.
Oh, I gotta be honest with you, like for a new person to watch Star Wars, like a Star Wars layman or whatever, Force ghosting appears to be something that just Jedi just know how to do. Like, it's introduced right away when the first Jedi dies. They just can come back and talk and appear, whatever, when needed. Like, it's not... You have to learn that it's something that needs to be learned.
Yeah.
So, like, when he appears at the end of Jedi and he just appears, like, that just makes sense to everybody who doesn't know that it should take a long time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree.
I think the simplest explanation for Anakin is that... James, I think you kind of alluded to it, is... He's the chosen one, you know, born under mysterious circumstances and will be kind of reborn in the Force under similarly strange circumstances. That's kind of the way I see it, because I don't know how it works any other way. Because by the time he jumped to the Sith side, he had no idea about the concept of Force ghosts and whether or not he learned about, I don't know, how would he have ever learned about it? As a Sith, a practicing Sith, how would he have ever heard that the Jedi were doing it? And how would he ever have started exploring that? I don't know if it works. Maybe they'll retcon it, shoehorn it in somewhere in a novel or a comic book. But to me, today, the simplest thing is that the Chosen One was just going to end up there anyway. It was his destiny. And one way or the other, the Force was going to put him there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just...
I know that's lazy and convenient, but I think as of today, it makes the most sense.
And he has to be there to put it, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, from the narrative standpoint of Jedi, which for us was about Luke, to see him connecting with his dad and to see his father redeemed, all of Luke's work to redeem his father paying yeah. off, that was a necessary thing.
That was the redemption aspect.
Absolutely. Well, Ads, thank you again, sir. My hat's off to you for another great question this week. Two great questions this week.
Yeah, I love you, Ads.
Well done, Ads.
All right, let's end the show with our great and good friend, Carlos Candido, who we will see shortly in the next couple weeks at Rogue One. So let's hear what he's got for us this week, and then we'll end the show.
Hello, boys. Your friendly neighborhood Carlos Candido with another question this week. I rewatched Empire Strikes Back yesterday, and I have issues with George Lucas putzing around with our first viewing of the Emperor. Now, I understand the need for the visuals to be updated and changed, seeing as how the original 1980 version was an old lady in a monkey mask. It looked nothing like the Emperor and Jedi or the prequels. My issue is with the dialogue. So here's the original.
What is thy bidding, my master?
There is a great disturbance in the Force.
I have felt it.
We have a new enemy. Luke Skywalker.
Yes, my master.
He could destroy us.
He's just a boy. Obi-Wan can no longer help him.
Okay, so we get already the information that Vader knows that Obi-Wan, being at the Death Star in Episode 4, and Luke destroying the Death Star, had there was a correlation there. Okay? So we get that part. I'm going to continue here.
The Force is strong with him. The son of Skywalker must not become a Jedi.
If he could be turned, he would become a powerful ally.
Yes.
All right, so we know this part. Now I'm going to go to the latest reworking, re-edit.
What is thy bidding, my master?
There is a great disturbance in the Force.
Obviously, having Ian McDiarmid do the voice and, you know, the visuals makes a big difference.
I have felt it.
We have a new enemy. The young rebel who destroyed the Death Star. I have no doubt this boy is the offspring of Anakin Skywalker.
Stupid. Stupid rewrite. No need to do that. Let's listen.
How is that possible?
Search.
How is that possible? Like, what are you? Are you a clown or a Sith?
Destroy us.
He's just a boy. Obi-Wan can no longer help him.
So you had no idea this guy was your son, and now all of a sudden you know that Obi-Wan was helping him?
The Force is strong with him. The son of Skywalker must not become a Jedi.
If he could be turned, he would become a powerful ally.
All right, so that's what I'm getting at. Like, I don't understand what the hell they were trying to do with the change there. Like, the opening crawl for Empire lets us know that Darth Vader's looking for Luke Skywalker. Why is he so surprised when the Emperor says it's his son? This makes him look weak, and it makes the next line about Obi-Wan no longer make sense. How was Obi-Wan helping the kid you didn't even know was your son 7 seconds ago? Is Vader playing dumb because he knows the Emperor lied about Anakin killing Padme? Or did George cock it up again? Would love your thoughts. Thanks, boys. Final question. Corey, did you finish reading Bloodline yet? Thanks. Take it easy. Carlos, out.
All right, Carlos. That's there's a mind bender of a question. And I'm gonna give it over to Corey to kick it off. Corey, why? Explain this. Tell us why. It's, dumb it down, this conversation between Palpatine and Vader. Why the rewrite? What does it mean? What do you take out of it?
Carlos kind of got it right. Like, I'm just going to say it right off the bat. Like, it was flubbed in a way, but it's kind of been retconned now. But you can look at it. The only other way you can look at it is Vader, and now we do know because of the comics, that Vader does know that there is his son exists. His son is out there. So it's kind of like his dirty little secret. Like, he knew, and he's pulling a Sith move. Like, he's being Sithy about it, as Kyle would say. Like, he's...
Yeah.
Like, he just wants...
That's exactly what he's doing.
He wants to rule the galaxy, father and son. Like, he wants his own apprentice, and that's what Sith do. They kind of, you know, they rise up eventually backstab. And backstab their own master.
That's kind of... Well, to Carlos's credit, and to anybody who doesn't read any of the Expanded Universe stuff, the mention of Obi-Wan doesn't make sense in either version, especially the new version. There's no reason why Vader needed to mention Obi-Wan's name as being the guy that's helping Luke. So that part sticks out to me as a mistake. But the part that does click is Vader playing dumb. Because like you said, Corey, in the Star Wars, or is it the Darth Vader comic, Boba Fett was assigned by Vader to get some answers for him. And he figures out that Luke Skywalker was the guy that blew up the Death Star.
Yeah, James, you got to see this. I'm going to link you this. Actually, I'm going to link it to you right now. I have it here. Such a cool scene. Like, Boba Fett's just like, I didn't get anything. I just got his name. He's like, what is it? He's like, Skywalker. And then, like, he's alone in this, like, throne room kind of deal, and everything around him just starts breaking.
Yeah, that's yeah, pretty dope.
Very Revenge of the Sith-esque. Yeah, but it's exactly that. It's what Corey said. It's Vader playing dumb and trying to keep his dirty little secret. His son is still alive, and if Vader plays his cards right, he can have Luke as his own apprentice, and together they can rule the galaxy as father and son. You know, Vader says as much in Empire. And if you go back to Revenge of the Sith, Anakin makes the, or Vader at that point, makes the same sort of overture to Padme, that I can overthrow him and we can rule the galaxy and make things the way we want them to be. So it's no surprise that Anakin / Vader wanted to get rid of Palpatine and be the person on top. And the question becomes, does Palpatine know that Vader knows?
Well, if he was smart, he'd know with the Obi-Wan comment, kind of, you know?
Well, that's sort
Carlos's
of...
Carlos's question,
it.
Exactly.
It's such a... It's so clumsy. It's so clumsy that Vader would stick his foot in his mouth that way. And the one thing, I guess, before we end, it does sort of bother me when you need to rely on external materials to complete the picture, because I don't think you can watch the movies and get the impression that we have, you know, with Vader looking to squeeze out Palpatine. I don't think that comes through necessarily on screen, given the dialogue. And I don't like that you need to rely on something else to confirm that narrative for you.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
No, it's a shoddy bit of writing, and Carlos, like, totally pegged it off there.
I'm gonna, if anybody else wants to chime in on this, because by no means are these complete, thorough thoughts, definitely let us know what you think.
Yeah, I definitely like the first version better, but I'll say about Carlos, I listened to his pod again this week and more good questions. I wish that guy would take a stance. He's always so wishy-washy on everything, you know? You never know how he feels. Carlos, let us know how you feel next time, man.
Oh, thank you, Carlos. I really appreciate the question. And my throat is starting to give out on me here, so... That will be the end of episode 51 of the Tumbling Saber podcast. Thank you to everybody. Thanks, Ads. Thanks, Carlos, for your questions this week. And everybody else, if you can, head on over to iTunes, drop us a review, help us out there. And we're doing pretty well in those rankings, so a little extra push wouldn't hurt. So head on over there, help us out. Otherwise, you can find Corey at Chop Rules on Twitter. You can find James at Tommy Bombadil 1. myself. I'm at Tumbling Saber. And guys, anything else you want to say before we close up?
Not too much, man.
Just watching it snow. Just watching it snow out the window. Another start to a great Canadian winter. And a shout out, of course, to the rest of the Commonwealth. Part of the reason our numbers are growing week after week, as they slowly do, is because of the other terrific podcasts, which are all worth checking out at StarWarsCommonwealth.com. You can link to all of them, and please do. They're all great.
Absolutely. Talk Star Wars, Generation X-Wing, Rogue Squadron podcast, and new to the lineup, the Skyhoppers, who just put out a good show this week about, or I guess maybe last week, depending on when you listen to this, about Dark Empire, that weird piece of expanded universe stuff that still makes waves today. Anyway, they had a great show about that, so check that out. And thank you guys for listening, and we will catch you later this week in Sith Disturbers.
I will be there too, watching this man every moment, wanting all of you. And I believe I can save you, just don't let me go. And I can see I'll be waiting, always waiting. Just don't let me go. Just don't let me go. Watching you walking away from me. Were you watching me? Was it just a dream? Just a dream. And I believe I can save you. Just don't.